This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:03. It's great to have you with us for the Friday edition of the Noon Business Hour. I'm Cisco Cotto. Discussion about Bitcoin. Is it the new gold? Also, Entrepreneur Friday as Peapod stops its service in Illinois. Another company is looking at how to get farm to table to your door. Valentine's Day, retailers of Cupid merchandise expecting a big windfall this year. We'll take a look at that in our next segment. Now, though, let's look at some of the economic reports out today. Joining us to help sift through all the data, Joel Naroff, president of Naroff Economics, based in Holland, Pennsylvania. Joel, let's begin with consumer spending, a modest increase. What's going on there?
Well, the consumer didn't start the year particularly well, that's for certain. And indeed, the mediocre numbers for January were propelled, I think, you know, largely by warm weather. A lot of spending on things such as building materials and garden equipment so people could get out when they normally couldn't. A lot of restaurants did well. So we didn't have snow, we didn't have the bitter cold that we're beginning to have a little bit of at least the last couple of days, keeping people from going out to eat. So we had nice weather. That kept things from being really, really soft. The consumer is happy, you know, confidence is there. They're just not going and spending like crazy.
Does that maybe have something to do with the end of the year? Retail sales leading up to the holidays and throughout the holidays seemed pretty strong. They just sort of spend a lot of their money there and they're taking a break?
That's a possibility. I am a little bit more worried about it on the fundamental basis. Average wages, hourly wages aren't really accelerating. They've actually started to slow down a little bit. Consumer income isn't growing as fast as it had been. Consumer debt is really skyrocketing. So when you look at the balance sheet of the consumer, it's okay. But, you know, given how the economy's been growing and how low the unemployment rate, it's not as great as it should be. And I think that that's begun to factor into the willingness to spend even more.
Now, people feeling fairly positive, so you think that that may change, too, as some of these other things are a little slow?
Well, you know, I think we got over, you know, some of the issues that affected consumer confidence as far as the impeachment is concerned. Now we've got to deal with what the impacts may be on the economy as a whole of both the Boeing situation, which affected obviously the industrial production, but also the coronavirus, which is going to affect growth as well as we go forward. So I think we're headed towards an economic slowdown in the first quarter and maybe even the second quarter. That's where we're going to really start testing consumer optimism, which has been really high and which has kept spending up and kept debt levels rising. If we have slow growth and a slowdown in job gains, I think we may start seeing some ebbing in confidence.
Thanks so much. Good analysis. Joel Naroff, president of Naroff Economics. Coming up, Valentine's Day spending sets a new record. Valentine's Day spending expected to soar 32% over last year, a record $27.4 billion lavished on loved ones. That's according to the National Retail Federation. Joining us with the details, Gerald Storch, CEO of Storch Advisors in Vero Beach, Florida. Jerry's also formerly vice chairman at Target and chairman and CEO of Toys R Us. Jerry, always good to have you on the show. So what do you make of these numbers as they're coming in?
Well, the consumer has a lot of money. People are working, wages are up, and consumer spending has been on fire for several years now, and it just keeps going up. And so what a great time for people to send gifts to those they love.
And they're taking advantage of that. Is it widespread? I mean, a lot of times you think of candy and that sort of thing. They've sort of kind of spreading the money around, or can we tell yet?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, there are some surprises in terms of what the money's being spent on. So jewelry is the biggest category by far at $5.8 billion. And everyone may not give jewelry, but when they do, it's worth a lot. Evening out is next at around $4 billion. Then clothing around $3 billion. We won't go into more detail on what that might be. Then candy at $2 billion, flowers at $2 billion, and green cards take up the rear at $1 billion of green cards just for this day.
So what does that say to retailers? That, I mean, we had a pretty strong holiday retail season, and now it's just kept going.
It's going to keep going and going because people have jobs and they have money and they're employed. And so they love to spend on gifts. But what's really interesting is that it's not just gifts for the person you love the most, maybe not just for your spouse, your Romeo or your Juliet. A lot of spending actually goes to other family members, to friends, to kids' classmates, to your coworkers for Valentine's Day, and where we've seen a huge rise, to your pet. 27% of people giving Valentine's gifts give one to their pet.
And I'm sure that the retailers who sell those things are loving that up and really pushing that and taking advantage of that affection.
Well, for sure. You know, retailers are always looking for an extra reason to buy. And we just came off of an excellent holiday shopping season. And as soon as you get off a holiday, you're in sort of the doldrums of early January when everything's kind of on clearance and everyone spent all their money for holiday presents. And so the retailers need something to jazz it up. And Valentine's Day, the first weekend on the calendar, that really makes a difference. And so suddenly the stores go from being painted red and green to being painted red and pink.
So you talked about some of the spending on restaurants and that sort of experience. I guess we're seeing a continued transformation here where people just want experiences, not necessarily trinkets.
Well, sales are up in for both physical goods as well as for experiences, but you're absolutely right. What we're seeing for the consumer as a whole is that they're moving away from just collecting things. You know, there's kind of an anti-consumption bias in certain segments of the population. But everyone likes to have a good time, so experiences are growing as a percent of total consumer spending. And so they're growing at a much more rapid growth rate than, for example, something like apparel, which clothing is one of the slowest growing categories we've seen for the last decade.
So you've you have significant experience at several retailers. Do you see a way for some of those retailers to pivot if people want experiences, but they're also willing to drop money on trinkets? Is there a way to combine them to make some of these retail stores bigger and better experiences at the same time?
Well, I think people try. That's sort of the fad, right? Make the store experiential so the consumer won't have to shop on the internet. But there's really not enough money in the world to make every bricks and mortar location a great experience, given the fact that we're just hopelessly overbuilt in bricks and mortar retail in the U.S. So we're going to see a lot of stores close. But the malls that remain and the stores that remain, you're absolutely right, it'll be much more exciting places to shop with a lot more capital invested in them and a lot more sort of that, wow factor as you enter the store and as you go around. But, there's still no doubt that there's been a seismic shift in retailing away from bricks and mortar, onto the internet, away from the shopping malls and the department stores and towards the discount chains and towards the hard lines retailing.
Good insight, as always. Thank you so much, Gerald Storch. He's CEO of Storch Advisors, based in Vero Beach, Florida.
It's 60 Minutes of Financial Planning. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Remember, a podcast of the Noon Business Hour is always available at WBBMNewsRadio.com and the Radio.com app. The Bitcoin boom appears to be back. The cryptocurrency has had a monster run as of late. It crossed over the $10,000 per token mark this week. It's at about $10,300 right now. Joining us to discuss what's behind the recent surge, Bill Ulivieri, owner of Senecal Capital Management in Glenview. All right, Bill, what's behind this? I think a lot of people gave up on Bitcoin, but apparently they shouldn't have.
No, they threw the baby out with the bathwater about a year and change ago when the token got down into the low to mid 3,000s. But once again, as in every equation, we see whether it's commodities, corn, wheat, soybeans, there's a supply and demand pendulum that swings back and forth. And now we're seeing more and more demand for Bitcoin. Specifically, I think a lot of it has to do with the asset bubble that is believed to be existing right now, both in bonds and in stocks. And this is I think it's a flight to quality. You know, Bitcoin is not your parents' flight to quality. This is it's a safe haven for the new generation of investors.
Yeah, and so in that sense, your parents are still probably going to gold, but the younger people may not be.
Exactly. Well, when companies like broker-dealers and online investment companies take polls of cryptocurrency as a concept with younger millennials and Gen Xs, Gen Zs, a majority of them already own cryptocurrency in one form or another. They're very distrustful of banks and the exchanges for what they put their parents through from 2007 until 2010. And actually, gold has done a horrible job protecting purchasing power since 1980. I mean, gold has increased by maybe 1.3% compounded annually, with the average U.S. rate of inflation over 3%. So you can't. So Bitcoin can't be counterfeited. It's private. It's scarce. It's divisible. It's easily transported from one location to another, like Chicago to Zurich, Switzerland, and you can send it almost instantaneously around the globe for virtually no cost. And because of these attributes, Bitcoin has performed flawlessly as a quote-unquote alternative asset class since its inception around 2009.
Is one of the things that has maybe held Bitcoin back, even though, again, as of late, it's doing well, mm-hmm. is one of the things that's held it back the fact that there's still a lot of people who just don't understand it. They still can't quite explain what it is.
Well, that's absolutely true. I would say that every day when I read a new article, Bitcoin is expressed as math. It's expressed as a freedom of speech protected by the First Amendment Bill of Rights. It is expressed as money, as a commodity, as a network protocol. So the funny thing is we're trying to fit Bitcoin into a old paradigm, like a new wine into an old skin, and it doesn't work. It's its own beast, and we need to change the way we think about Bitcoin rather than trying to put it in a bin of traditional financial assets or speculative assets.
Do you see it continuing to rise? I mean, 12,000, 13,000, is that out of the picture?
It's not out of the picture. As a matter of fact, I think because in May of 2020, just in a few more months, the rewards that are distributed to the miners, the people who verify and guarantee the integrity of the blockchain that Bitcoin rides on, is going to be cut in half. So we're going to have less supply available for the same number of buyers and interested parties. So if anything, I think just that side of the equation, if demand stays the same and supply is cut in half, we'll see higher prices going forward. So really, Bitcoin supply is already fixed. It's just really a demand side of the equation now, and we're seeing more and more demand for Bitcoin and alternative asset classes.
We'll keep watching it. Thanks so much, Bill Ulivieri, owner of Senecal Capital Management in Glenview.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Cisco Cotto. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM, a grocery delivery business that brings the farm to your front door. It's Entrepreneur Friday. A viral video has debate raging. We'll talk about reclining your airline seat in economy or whether you should avoid it. The Justice Department closes its case against former FBI Deputy Director Andrew McCabe. And Cupid's arrow hits its mark for winners of the county clerk's Valentine's Day marriage sweepstakes. WBBM Business, the Dow down 98. NASDAQ is down 7, and the S&P is down 3 points. Oil today is up almost 1%. It's just about back into the $52 range. We have beautiful sunshine all day long, but a high of just 17 degrees. Right now, it is 10 degrees at O'Hare, 11 at Midway, and the wind chill makes it feel like 1 below zero. The Noon Business Hour is presented by Republic Bank of Chicago. Stocks are trading lower. Joining us to talk about it, Matt Shapiro, president of MWS Capital here in Chicago. Matt, what do you make of what you see on some markets that are down, but not down significantly today?
Hey, Cisco, happy Valentine's Day. I think just kind of putting in a break. I mean, we've had a tremendous 2 weeks with the big spill we had at the end of January on the coronavirus just really breaking out, and then just a dramatic rebound all the way to new highs on strength of earnings of those major FANG stocks. So I think after all has been said and done over the past 3 weeks, traders are going to be looking to hit the exits, a little bit of a decline today, and maybe pick in to see if there's something that you might want to add to your portfolio.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that. So they're going to get out of certain things, but it's not like they're necessarily just going to throw their money on the sidelines.
Exactly. And it's very tough to do. You know, that's the story of this market. What do you do with money on the sidelines when the 10-year treasury is, you know, 1.56%, so low? It's almost as if you might as well stay in cash, Cisco, and wait for some of these stocks to pull back. But they almost never do. I mean, there was really, what, a one-day chance when the Dow was down 600 on the coronavirus fears, and it went right back. You know, take a look at Tesla, 900 back down to 700 and now $800 today. So it's really tough to buy these surging technology companies. And, you know, what do you sell and get out of Apple? Most people don't want to do that.
And the challenge, too, if you're, you know, if you're thinking maybe some of those tech companies, you know, maybe you should kind of back out a little bit, is they just seem to keep rising. I remember someone talking with me back when Amazon was $400, and they said, no, it was just $200. This is too expensive. And look where it is now.
Right. It's been the modern day railroad. So 10 years ago, the iPhone was invented and, you know, trillions of dollars of wealth was created in our economy. So that was the critical thing this earnings season. Would Microsoft, would Amazon, Google, and, you know, Tesla come out with great earnings? And they did. And corporate earnings up about 1.7% year over year when they were expected to decline. So even with China, even with Boeing 737 on the sidelines, investors are very optimistic. Earnings are good enough versus such low interest rates being so low.
Let's talk about Boeing for a moment since you mentioned them. United Airlines now says it will be September before it uses the 737 MAX. It seems like, yeah, Boeing obviously has a really horrible year last year, but this year isn't looking much better.
Yeah, you know, that's realistic. I think when we've talked about it, it's going to take a year or two. I think it's really going to be end of the year before these planes get back up in the air. So the news has actually gotten a little bit better for Boeing, with some indication that the regulators are going to approve the plane. So, you know, Boeing was down in the 310s. I'd been very indifferent to it for about a year or two, and I actually started to buy some. So I think, you know, Boeing on a pullback here is definitely reasonable. If you've missed some things in this market, here's a stock with potentially strong long-term fundamentals where I think the news could get better.
Would you say airline stocks are sort of the same, where they're obviously getting hit by this 737 MAX, but eventually it's going to turn around, even if it's next year?
Yeah, eventually. And, you know, and of course, it's specific, but specific to each airline. UAL down, but Southwest Airlines actually near an all-time high.
So what other areas is, you've been looking around, we're through just about through earnings season here. What areas do you feel like are pretty strong and people should be paying attention to them?
Well, one of the most impressive points to me was the large medical insurers, United Healthcare and Humana. Both came out with great earnings. Both came back trading back up to all-time highs. So there's a non-Amazon-style stock that you can buy that's in, of course, the large medical segment of the economy. And I think politically, I think there's not going to be any major change, no matter what happens in the 2020 election with that. So the biotechnology funds seem to be doing well. And secondarily, you know, take a look at a China fund, Fidelity Pacific Basin, or some, you know, a Schwab or a Vanguard fund in the Asia Pacific region. You know, there is an incredible response to it. So take advantage of these lower international markets.
Yeah, and it sounds like you're encouraging people to sort of broaden their appeal, or at least what they look at. A lot of times they just go for those hot stocks, the sexy stocks, the ones that everyone's talking about.
I agree. Now, that said, it's turned money management on its head, the iPhone, you know, kind of look for those hidden things. Well, that didn't work for 10 years. You had to be in the obvious thing, Apple, Amazon, and the like. So you have them already. Maybe spread out into those international markets, healthcare, things that can balance you out a little bit.
In general, as you've been kind of paying attention to the forward guidance, are companies feeling pretty positive about this year, or some concerns?
Well, they are, although you see all this anecdotal evidence of, you know, companies scaling back production because of issues with supply chain in China. But I think with the tariffs and that whole situation with the China trade deal, sadly and unfortunately, the coronavirus situation in China is actually hastening companies, you know, moving away from there a little bit. But guidance is generally positive, and 2020 should be a big rebound year for earnings. So valuations of stocks, well, they seem somewhat high versus these extremely low interest rates, are actually pretty good. So despite the day-to-day pullbacks that you can have, you know, 700 points on a day, the market seems to just be marching higher.
Thanks so much. Always appreciate all of that insight. Matt Shapiro, president of MWS Capital here in Chicago. Just ahead, Entrepreneur Friday, we'll talk to the founder of a farm-to-table delivery business.
Lunch money for all generations. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's Entrepreneur Friday on the Noon Business Hour. Today we meet the founder of a company that delivers products from local farms right to your door. We welcome Shelly Herman, co-founder of Irv's and Shelly's Fresh Picks based in Niles. Shelly, good to have you here. So tell us, for people who've never heard of Irv and Shelly's Fresh Picks, just kind of give us a little sketch of what you do.
Yeah, so we buy from over 100 farms and artisans in the region, and then we have a warehouse where we pack up orders and we deliver to homes and businesses throughout Chicagoland. So everybody gets the best of local and organic foods right to their door.
So the niche then is it's right at your door, so you don't have to go out and pick it out, but also you get this feel of, hey, it's fresh local stuff.
Yes, really fresh. Even in winter, we're about 50% local with farm fresh eggs and meats and dairy. So, yeah, good stuff all year round.
So what kind of a feedback do you get from your customers about the quality of the food, the taste of the food? I mean, what do they say about it that makes them want to keep doing this?
Oh, they love it. I mean, you can really taste the difference if a carrot was picked close by in Illinois, you know, if it's coming from far away and being shipped and grown more for storage than taste. So people are just so happy. You know, their kids are enjoying eating more fruits and vegetables. And I think a lot of people are on the healthy trend, so taste is great.
And since this is an entrepreneur segment, when you were thinking about getting this started, was that the hole in the market that you saw? Hey, people want fresh and local?
Yeah, I think we were a little early before people were really demanding it, but we were friends with farmers who just said, hey, you know, we could sure use some help with marketing and trucking our food to Chicago. So we decided to jump in.
And so did that, like you mentioned, it's taken off. So did that, you get in early and then people can trust you and then you're sort of the go-to for this sort of thing?
Yeah, I mean, yes, it took off, but also there's a lot of challenges in grocery with big national companies coming in and, you know, spending a lot more than us on technology and marketing. So we've had to really work hard to compete in this market.
Yeah, and one of those I wanted to ask you about is Peapod has announced,
yeah,
and they were early, a leader in this. They're not doing it in Illinois, Wisconsin, or Indiana anymore, and yet you keep going strong. So apparently you've outlasted the giant.
Yeah, that's so sad to see them go. I mean, you know, but that we have this particular niche, as I've said, and, you know, as a mission company focused on healthy food and the environment, we're not, it's not all about maximizing profits. We don't have outside investors. We have mission investors that support us. So it's just a different thing.
So for an entrepreneur that is thinking about getting into something that is a niche, you mentioned there are risks to this. There are certainly costs to this. What kind of advice would you give them as to what they would have to expect, not only in your industry, but pretty much any industry?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just the awareness that the industry changes. You know, you start with your concept, takes off, you grow, it's great, but you just got to keep your eye on the market because it changes and you have to adapt. And the more quickly you can adapt, the better.
And then really be prepared for everything, right? Because you,
you
got to have a thick skin, a strong stomach here to do this.
Yeah, you got to like roller coaster rides if you're an entrepreneur, for sure.
As you're reaching out and building a customer base, how do you do it? I mean, is it advertising? Is it word of mouth? Maybe a combination? What do you do?
Yeah, so, you know, as most small companies, word of mouth is really a big part of it, and that was more of a big part when we started. Now, of course, with social media, you've got to be active online, both with just posting on Instagram or doing digital advertising. So we do a bunch of that as well now.
You know, let me ask you before we let you go, because this is something we've been talking about around the office here, that we keep getting these reports that kale was sort of that sexy celebrity vegetable, and now it's moved over to mushrooms. That
yes.
Is that true?
Yeah, well, you know, because people are thinking about eating less meat, so you see some products that maybe are 25% mushroom in the meat products, and then just mushrooms are very satisfying, so you can have, you know, a portobello mushroom instead of a burger, and that could be your meal.
Fascinating, fascinating. Well, congratulations to you, and good luck to you in the future. Shelly Herman, co-founder of Irv and Shelly's Fresh Picks in Niles. That's our Friday entrepreneur. Up next, is it wrong to recline your airline seat? We'll join in on the debate.
Your best stock option. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
You may have seen the video. It's gone viral. The debate rages on again after an airline passenger reclines her seat and the man behind her starts punching the back of the seat. Joining us with whether they should do that or not, Joe Brancatelli, editor and publisher of JoeSentMe.com, based in New York. Joe, I mean, you've seen the video. I mean, this guy just repeatedly punching the back of a seat, and it seems like it's all because the woman leaned back in her seat. Yet it just goes on and on and on. It's kind of striking video.
It is indeed. It's certainly not the kind of stuff you want to see go viral on Valentine's Day. Not a lot of love lost. But this, as you say, Cisco, has been going on for, the better part of two decades now. And the ultimate criminal is the airlines. They continue to cut the seat room between seats to really unlivable levels, about 7 inches in the last generation.
And so when you lean back, you almost can't help but be in the next person's lap.
You, in fact, are in the next person's lap, which annoys the passenger behind you. But on the other hand, the airline makes it possible, or virtually all airlines make it possible, for you to recline your seat. So it's unfair to tell the person in the front, how dare you, take whatever small bits of rights you have on an aircraft and recline your seat. So it's the airlines pitting passenger against passenger and hoping nobody noticed, the man behind the curtain who's created all the problems.
And so for the airlines, in this case, they like the fact that on social media, a lot of people are going after the guy who's punching the seat, because then they're not going after the airlines.
Exactly. Now, what can anybody listening tell us what airline it was? No, because they're so busy watching an out of control guy punching a seat back. I mean, it's just one of the things that the airlines love to do. It's endless. They're always setting passengers against each other simply for no other reason. They don't want people to talk about the fact that they're the villains who've cut out all the seat room.
Yeah, and they certainly don't want to be. They don't want us to be talking about that. As far as fixing it, I mean, unless airlines feel some sort of pressure from Washington or customers, there's really no reason for them to stop it.
The only pressure that would come from Washington, we've learned historically, are from the Transportation Department with rules rather than a law, because a law will just never get passed. And what it will be done will not be about comfort, but about safety. There's real questions now as to whether airlines that have taken so much seat, as I say, we've gone from, say, 34 inches to about 29 inches in a generation. And now there are real questions when you've packed in so many seats onto a plane, whether you can evacuate that plane safely. You're supposed to, by law and regulation, evacuate a plane within 90 seconds. There's real question over whether that's doable when you've packed in so many seats, so much tighter together, with no extra exits. It's not like airlines have added exits while they've cut legroom.
That's Joe Brancatelli. Thanks so much. He is editor and publisher at JoeSentMe.com. If you missed any part of today's show, you can just go to our stream and rewind to the time you want. We have a pause and rewind function. It works both online and by updating the radio.com app.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.